Where's the word?
What's the word? Darpanam. The capacity to generate satisfaction. Prananam. The giving of life. Apam. Of water. Deva. O Lord. Tvam. You. Taha. Water itself. Cha. And. Tat. Of it. Water. Rasaha.
Rasaha.
The taste.
The taste.
Ujaha.
Ujaha.
Bodily warmth and vitality.
Bodily warmth and vitality.
Due to the strength of the vital air.
Due to the strength of the vital air.
Sahaha.
Sahaha.
Mental strength.
Mental strength.
Balam.
Balam.
And physical strength.
And physical strength.
Cheshta.
Cheshta.
Endeavor.
Endeavor.
Gati. And movement. Vayuho. Of ear. Tava. Your. Ishvara.
Ishvara.
O Supreme Controller.
Okay. Translation. And my Lord, you are water, and also its taste, and its capacities to quench thirst and sustain life. You exhibit your potencies through the manifestations of air as bodily warmth, vitality, mental power, physical strength, endeavor, and movement. And I guess we should read text number 9 now. Okay, Sugar, if you want.
We can all do it together. Dishantam avakashasi dishatam spata ashraya nadovayas tamantara akitinam pitakitihi.
Which the translation is, you are the directions and their accommodating capacity, the all-pervading ether and the elemental sound residing within. You are the primeval, unmanifested form of sound, the first syllable, om, and audible speech by which sound as words acquires particular references. And there's a purport to that, which is, in accordance with the general process of creation, speech always becomes audible in stages which proceed from subtle inner impulse to outward expression. These stages are mentioned in the mantras of the Rig Veda 1:164 through 45, which Keshava, maybe you could read that for us.
Chatvari vat parimita padani tani vidubhavanayi manishina guhayam trini nihitani nangayanti turiyam vacha manushya vadanti.
Which means, discriminating Brahmins know of 4 progressive stages of language. 3 of them remain hidden within the heart as imperceivable vibrations, while the 4th stage is what people ordinarily understand as speech. Oma gyana tamirandasya janajana salakaya chaksum meditanyena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Jaitam suritopangor mamamanda matergati matsarva svapatam bojo radha madana mohano. So are there any questions? After hearing these verses, is there anything that you wonder about? Like, what are they talking about? So are there any questions about what we just read? You want to hear something first? All right. Because a lot of you leave at 8:30, which is in 10 minutes. So we hardly ever get to the question, period. So I was wondering if I was trained when I was small to always ask questions if you don't understand anything. After a while, if you don't ask questions, then you just get used to not understanding things. And you don't ever ask anything. You just say, well, I guess that's the way it is. I just don't know. But if you want to understand something, then you're supposed to ask questions. I'll read the verse again and see if we can figure out a question from this, see if everybody understands. What we're reading is Vyasadeva is glorifying Krishna. And it started on text 11 and it runs to text 21. So we're kind of like still in the first half of his statements, glorifying Krishna. He's seeing something. And he's expressing what he sees by his developed consciousness. We see by our degree of consciousness, our intelligence. So the Vedic scriptures, which is what we're studying here, the Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam, Veda, who knows what Veda means? Veda means knowledge. And specifically, what is matter? What is spirit? And the controller of both. Who knows what Veda means? Oh, okay, so there's a couple listening. Thank you. All right. So what's the difference between matter and spirit? And the controller of both is what we're learning. This is what we're acquiring knowledge. So matter has one specific nature that we can mention, is that it is dependent. It doesn't move on its own. In other words, it's dead. Matter's dead. Pretty simple to understand. If this piece of wood here, you would generally say that this piece of wood is dead. The general vision is that it's matter, it's dead. You look at me, you think, well, he could be alive. Because there's some vitality, there's some life symptoms in here. But actually, we understand that the body that you're seeing, this body is actually made of the same elements that this piece of wood's made up of. It's earth, a lot of water, some fire, that's the nervous system, and I'm also on fire, 98.6. If you're healthy, you're on fire, they take your temperature. And what you eat turns to fire. Calories is a measurement of heat. So earth, water, fire, air, thing coming out. Some places, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and the identification with this lump. Okay, so we're trying to understand. So if matter doesn't move, something has to move it. That's alive. So Krishna says that the dead matter, this is inferior because it doesn't do anything. It can't do anything on its own. It has to be moved by the superior matter, superior element, energy, which is alive. Okay. So here, Vasudeva is pointing out that what is the active ingredient? Here, we've understood that the creation, because Dvaitacharya's appearance day, he glanced over the matter and it became activated, right? The life moves matter. So then we also understood that like an arrow, its potency is according to the strength of the archer. And we also understand what is the glance of the sun. The sun glance activates, photosynthesis activates the life in plants, mostly. Some of them, I know mushrooms. But the idea that this is the glance. So this glance, every one of us has different glances. How about when your teacher glances at you? Is that good or is that not so good? It depends. If you did... Suppose you didn't do your homework. Where do you look most of the time? You look down and hope she doesn't look at you. Because she'll say, oh, did you do your homework? Well, the dog ate it. there's different reasons that people have. But how about if you just turned in your papers and there's a couple people that got A pluses for extra credit for doing such a wonderful job of hearing, assimilating, and giving it back to the teacher, and then your head's up, and when the teacher looks at you, you know, you feel something. So how can you tell what the feeling is that's in the glands? There's a glance and then there's a feeling. So we come to the temple, and what's it called when you're sitting in front of the deities? You're getting the blank of the deities. Darshan. Darshan means the deities are seeing us. So when you're acting in a way that you're happy with what you're doing, and you're recognizing the glance of the deities, you're very happy. And you may even sing and dance. You're so happy. That's what we do. We're exchanging glances. And then there's also a recognition that I may not be doing the right thing. And what does anybody know what that's called when you don't do the right thing and you feel bad about it? It's kind of an antiquated word nowadays. Shame. Feels ashamed. Like, here's an instance of what happened one time in my life around 1977, 78. It was in the Miami temple. And the way the temple was set up, the temple room was between the kitchen and bajari room and the brahmachari ashram. So I had to walk to the brahmachari ashram. So as opposed to going out and going all the way around the temple, I just cut through the temple room. It's right there. It's just the other door. And as I'm going through there, because I'm in the action mode during the day, and I'm just having to get to the other side. So as I'm walking very quickly through that, I noticed the deities were open like they are now. But I didn't really pay too much attention because my mind was on getting through their room. So in my mind, I start to imagine that they were seeing me, and they're saying, who's this guy walking through our room like this? He's not even paying any attention to us, you know? So I said, okay. So I decided I'd offer my obeisances. So while I'm offering my obeisances, and I'm feeling kind of bad that I was doing, because I know better. When you come before the deities, you offer your obeisances, Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when you leave, you offer your obeisances. So as I was offering my obeisances, I was still feeling kind of bad. So I'm thinking, what's he doing here anyway? Like, I'm thinking, what am I doing? You know, why am I here anyway? So while I was in offering my obeisances, I was my head's down on the floor, and I pointed with my hand that I'm with him, pointing to Prabhupada. That's what I was doing there. So I still kind of remember that what are we doing here? Well, we're with Srila Prabhupada. We're assisting him in his mission. And he's giving us this knowledge so we can understand what is matter and what is spirit. One is dead and one's alive. Now, the problem comes is if you identify with something that's dead. What could be the problem if you identify with something that's dead? Anybody know? Well, one thing is that you have, you got an idea. Well, sometimes these bodies are moving and we still identify with them. But one of the problems is that they wear out and then you have to leave the body. So you know what that's called when the soul leaves the body? Yeah, dying, death. Nobody likes that very much, generally speaking. So the idea is that we want to identify with the living thing. So in these verses, we're understanding how to see, seeing matter, seeing spirit, seeing the controller, both is knowledge, Veda. We're studying the Vedas so we can see the active principle. So if you start with nothing, how do you get water? There's nothing. So there's a whole process of creation. So in this verse here, this is quite similar when he says, my Lord, you are water, and also its taste and its capacity to quench thirst and sustain life. So this water is a very interesting point. And who knows in the Bhagavad Gita what verse this is almost like?
Oh, you do? Yes, sir.
English or Sanskrit? Number. Oh, you know it. You want to say it or you just know? Okay. How about a 7-8? Right after 7-7. Okay. Rasoham. Anybody else know it? Rasoham? That's the first two. So, all right. So it says, O son of Kunti, I am the taste of water. So who's speaking when they're saying, I am the taste? It's Krishna. So here's Krishna speaking, and also Vasudeva was explaining the same thing. I am the taste of water. See, the time's gone already. The light of the sun and the moon. Didn't we just have that a couple days ago? Is talking about the light. So the light is the active principle. You can have a planet, but the active principle of the sun is its sunlight. And look at all the wonderful things that it does. So we're seeing the active principle. Just like I remember working in a pharmacy, and they had medicine that had an active ingredient in it. And they also had the same exact thing without the active ingredients. It was called a placebo. And sometimes in the old days, they used to just give you that too. The same thing with no active ingredient, just to see if it was all in your mind. But anyway, the idea is that there's an active ingredient in everything that makes it work. And that is Krishna. So here he's saying, and we should pick that out, because otherwise this world is dead. And then in the purport to this verse, Prabhupada's going to explain a very significant point that maybe I can make a transition into Madhvacharya on that point. You know which point that would be? Okay, there's two ways of looking at water. Okay, you know the two ways of almost looking at anything? It's without relationship or with relationship. Or in other words, the words that we're familiar with by philosophy is impersonal and personal. So have you ever been treated like an imperson? It's generally like cold shoulder. Nobody really acknowledges that you even exist. Does anybody ever have a feeling like that? Maybe a couple people you thought were your friends, but they didn't acknowledge you. So how does that make you feel? Anybody had that experience? You're kind of left out. Anyway, so Krishna also, he supplies everything, but he's a person. And our specific discipline that we've been blessed with by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and the Siddhic succession is to understand Krishna's personal feature. So water is a nice example of that. And then, of course, in the rest of that verse, text 8, O son of Kunti, I am the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon, the syllable Om, that was also mentioned in the Vedic mantras. So the syllable Om, is there an active principle in the syllable Om? This is what we're looking for. We're looking for the active principle, and then we're looking for a relationship that we have with that active principle. In fact, that's more or less Om in itself. I am Om. He says in the Vedic mantras, I am the sound in ether and the ability in man. And we were just reading about the ability in man that was in our verse, wasn't it? Text 9, wasn't it? It says, the sound within, you are the primeval unmasked form, the first syllable Om. And there's also the strength. It mentioned a couple places about strength. So it's quite similar to this verse. And it's so important. Because we hear so much about Krishna consciousness, we may group it all together as Krishna consciousness. But take one part of it, just one thing. Like, just take this water as just one thing. And if you get one part of Krishna consciousness, any part, it'll do such an amazing thing as compared to when the tide comes in, all the boats in the harbor raise up. So if you just get one point that can establish and develop a little bit more of your relationship with Krishna, everything else goes up too. Because Krishna's in our heart, and we more or less turn the other way, which, as we're talking about relationship, it's kind of like cold shoulder. You know, it doesn't feel good for Krishna. So we want to have Krishna happy. You know who likes to please Krishna the most? Who likes to please Krishna the most? Radharani. So we're in line of bhakti mam api jananti to please Krishna. We're learning how to please Krishna. And if you want to please Krishna, something very wonderful takes place when you chant Hare Krishna, when you, everything changes, when you just have that. Then you can ask about devotional service. How can I please Krishna? How can I make sure it's pure? And you get another type of intelligence, amrita, intelligence that stops the cycle of birth and death. So in the purport to this Bhagavad Gita verse where it talks about I am the taste of water, this verse explains how the Lord is all-pervasive by his diverse material and spiritual energies. So you know the difference between the material and spiritual energies? What's material energy? Inferior, dull, dependent, or dead? Think you got that? Okay. And the spiritual energy, which is alive. The Supreme Lord can be preliminarily, that means right in the beginning, perceived by his different energies. And in this way, he is realized impersonally. So, okay, you see the water. Where did this water come from? Oh, this water came from Krishna. Earth, water, fire. He said, these are my separated eight energies. Okay, so you know about that so you can realize impersonal Krishna. Okay. As the demigod in the sun is a person and is perceived by his all-pervading energy, the what? What is the sun's all-pervading energy? The sunshine. Okay. So the Lord, although in his eternal abode, is perceived by his all-pervading diffuse energies. The taste of water is the active principle of water. Active principle, we got that today. Maybe you can remember. What did Madan Mohan, did he say anything I can remember? I don't remember anything. I like this class, but I don't remember anything. Okay, so what is, try to take away at least one thing. So what is the active principle? This is nice. So got it, active principle? Because that's what makes something dead alive, the active principle. It's active. Active means alive. You can't have something active that's not alive. It's life is moving it. Okay. The taste of water is the active principle of water. No one likes to drink seawater because its pure taste of water is mixed with salt. Attraction for water depends on its purity of taste, and this pure taste of water is one of the energies of Krishna. The impersonalist perceive the presence of the water. The impersonalist perceive the presence of the Lord in water by its taste, and the personalist also glorify the Lord for his kindly supplying tasty water to quench his thirst. That was also in the verse today. So we're talking personal and impersonal. These are good to see these distinctions between personal and impersonal. So how do the impersonalists perceive Krishna in water? A little louder. By its taste. Thank you for listening. Okay, and the personalist, that was a little bit harder to repeat. It says, the personals also, instead of perceiving, they glorify the Lord by his kindly supplying tasty water to quench your thirst. Okay, so what's the personalist? How do they do it? They glorify, and what do they glorify Krishna for? The taste, and also for supplying the water. If you're in the desert and there's no water, water is very valuable. We don't consider it so much here because they're so plentiful, but it says that it sustains your life. You don't live very long without water. So nityanam chaitanya chaitananam. You can use that verse also to remember. Who knows that verse? You know nityanam chaitanya chaitananam? Echo bahu tatikama. We're alive, pretty much, right? You sure? How can you be sure you're alive? Oh, active. Hey, that was a good answer. Who said that? Ah, right, we're active. Oh, well, you were listening. Okay, so a dead body, it's not active. All the same parts are still there. They still got the earth, water, fire, air, ether. I don't know about the mind. It depends how quick you catch them. They generally, that's a subtle body goes and gets usually removed by, you know how the subtle body leaves a sinful person on his own? He gets helped. How does he get helped with? Who removes the subtle body and the soul out of a sinful person? Anybody know? Oh, Radha Damodar knows. Well, he has his dutas. Yeah, he has his dutas, Yama dutas. Very scary looking group. They come and I've seen a person or two die, and there's a thing they call thrashing, where they're throwing themselves around back and forth. And for me, I think that's when they first saw the Yamadutas, very scary looking group. And that's when you come to understand all this stuff that you heard in the Bhagavatam class, it's true. All the stuff that I did wrong, I didn't get away with any of it. They had security cameras. The directions and the accommodating potencies was there. So, and this, in our stage, we still think, okay, this is probably the best thing to do. But when you see the Yamadutas, it scares the life right out of you, and they take it away. But it's, when you understand everything that you did wrong, you're accountable for. Nobody thinks like that. I mean, the beginning of it, there's some shame. That's what we're thinking, because we're recognizing Krishna's glance. He's seeing us. We're always, Bhaktisiddhanta he liked this a lot. He says, when you think you're the seer, you're seeing sense objects. When you think that you're being seen by Krishna, then you're acting in your constitutional position in your relationship to Krishna. So, because the time goes by so quickly, I wanted to mention that we're born into this world overcome by desire and hate, and we more or less impersonally start off. We have to be mercifully assisted by the internal potency and a representative of Krishna, spiritual master, in the cyclic succession. And he awakens our dormant Krishna consciousness in a personalistic way by our relationship with the spiritual master, Sakshadhari Twaina, by Yasya Prashada, Bhagavad Prashada. We understand we please our spiritual master, we please Krishna, and we can make advancement. So this pleasing, feeling the pleasingness, we could also say that that's taste. We have a taste in what we're doing by the reciprocation of the glance of Krishna. We have Krishna's always glancing on us, And if we respond without denying his personality, then we have to acknowledge a relationship. Just like you can think when you have a person, a friend, and if you don't acknowledge his likes and dislikes, his personality, you treat him impersonally, it doesn't feel good, especially if it may happen to us, so we can get a better understanding. So in the purport, this is a verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Prabhupada gave us, Madhya 9, text 245. And I'll read a little bit of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Next arrives in Udipi, the place of Madhvacharya, where the philosophers known as Tatmabhadis reside. There he saw the deity of Lord Krishna and became mad with ecstasy. In the purport, Prabhupada says, Sripad Madhvacharya took his birth near Udipi, which is situated in the South Karma district of South India, just west of Sahyadri. This is the chief city of the South Kanara province. So I'm going to, let's see, when did it take place? It was in the year 1040, Shakava, which is AD, our ones that we're used to, 1118. And according to some, there's a difference. In his childhood, Madhvacharya was known as Vasudev, and there were some wonderful stories surrounding him. It is said that once his father piled up many debts, Madhvacharya converted tamarind seeds into actual coins and paid them off. Now, what about that? Nowadays, you probably get arrested for counterfeiting or something. How he did that, when he was 5 years old, he was offered the sacred thread. So he got his initiation at 5 years old. A demon named Mahiman lived near the abode, near his house, and in the form of a snake. And at that time, at the age of five, Madhvacharya killed a snake with the toe of his left foot. Ooh, so just imagine looking out and seeing your child putting his toe in the head of a big snake and killing him. But, oh no, my poor little boy. When his mother was very much disturbed, he would appear before her in one jump. How did he get the ability to jump so much, Pran? How's he jump so good? We know somebody else who's a good jumper. What was it? Hanuman. Hanuman was a good jumper. Remember, Lord Ramchandra had to build a bridge, but Hanuman jumped. How far was that? Like 400 miles? How was it? Long distance. So he also was, he was a great scholar, even in his childhood. Although his father did not agree, he accepted sannyas at the age of 12. Ooh, 12 years old, your son says, I'm going to take sannyas, leave home, preach. We can also think of the sentiment of Mother Sachi when Lord Chaitanya said he was going to take sannyas. But here, 12 years old, what his mother must have... Well, of course, Krishna helps. Upon receiving sannyas from Achyuta Prakash, he received the name Purna Pragya Tirtha. Purna is complete, is it? And Pragya, conscious Tirtha. Thus traveling all over India, he finally discussed scriptures with Vidya Sankara, the exalted leader of the Shingari Math. Okay, let's see. Talks a little bit. There's a lot written in this purport, which I figure Pran Govind will be going over tonight, and we're almost at the end. Madhvacharya's devotion to the Lord and his erudite scholarship became known throughout India. Consequently, the owners of the Sringari Math established by Shankaracharya became a little perturbed. Why would they become perturbed? They're dedicated their whole time to proving that God is impersonal or that you're God. And here we have a powerful acharya. We understand, just like what Srila Prabhupada, Nirvisesha Sunyavadi, we're in the disciplic succession where everybody, we want to inform everybody of the personal nature of Krishna. This is what we're to learn every day, and we're to practice every day with the deities and with all of our sadhanas practicing. Remember Krishna in his personal aspect. The taste of water, how do we remember now with the taste of water? That he's impersonally the taste of water, but he's also kindly supplied the water to quench our thirst. And there's more to it that expands. That's one unique feature about personalism, is that Krishna will always be expanding that from within your heart. It was reputed that there's no limit to the bodily strength of Madhvacharya. There was a person named Kadanjari who was famed for possessing the strength of 30 men. Madhvacharya placed his big toe of his foot upon the ground and asked the man to separate it from the ground. The strong man could not do so even after great effort. Then he passed away at the age of 80 while writing a commentary on the Upanishad. Okay, so if there's any questions or comments, we could take those or end the class. Jiri Kram Prabhu.
Water, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink.
That's because it's salty.
Does it mean Krishna is not in that taste?
It certainly won't quench your thirst. So Krishna is so intelligent that he makes a system to preserve the water so it doesn't go bad. He puts salt in it, salt a preservative, and then when it's needed, he has a system where he distills it up into the clouds, and ganaganatvam, it goes and distributes pure water for and stores it in its pure form on the tops of mountains during the winter, and then it runs down all during the hot season for it to irrigate your crops. So there's a whole system. You can look at anything and just see the marvel, the engineering of how to have such a big body of water not go bad. Of course, modern man is doing its best. Oh, yeah. What? Well, there you go. It's both. It depends on your vision. You know, the water sustains life, so you would think there's life in the water that sustains the life, but it's also a material element. Just like everything here, it can be used in Krishna's service. So ultimately, life as we perceive it from the material side is a little bit different. Actually, everything's different from the mundane perspective of what life is. But when you use it in Krishna's service, it has its full life, its full potency. But yes, Krishna's in it, and there's life actually in everything for those who have the vision to see it too. Like this matter, it wouldn't stick together if there wasn't life in it. So, but generally it's considered dead. At the time of annihilation, it goes back to the pradhan. Yes, sir.
Inferior energy of the Lord.
Okay.
You know, so in that state, you would say it. behind the water there is
yeah, is the sun alive? Is sunshine alive? Are these bodies alive?
Yeah, I learned that you're not supposed to pee into water because it's a demigod, right?
Well, right? We find that the advanced souls, there is a, that's a nice question. It may have an element of facetiousness, but the idea is that for advanced soul, before he enters to the water, like he's going to go swimming, he touches the water and puts it on his head, recognizing that element. We're coming out of the stage of animal life and trying to develop our consciousness. So as the consciousness develops, we see the active principle and become more humble and respectful of everything. So we see that. If you ever notice, when someone goes into a body of water, the first they put their hand on their head, they touch the water and put it on their head as respect for them. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.